Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 8th of August. We thought because it is one day before important recall elections in the state of Wisconsin that we would concentrate on those. We won't do exclusively recall elections. It's all things political, so what's ever on your table. A lot of people are watching the financial markets these days, so we can explore that as well. But we thought that you would want to talk about the recall elections. And so we will do that. Over the next 2 weeks, a number of Wisconsin state lawmakers will face elections that, as you know, were part of a political backlash from a confrontation with Democrats last winter. There has been an incredible amount of money spent on these races. I hear anywhere from $30 to $35 million for recall elections. As you know, if you're in any of the districts where somebody is being recalled, the ads are just incessant. That's all you hear is recall ads. Recall ads. Mike Ushay has interviewed a number of the candidates, and we're happy to have him with us the first hour of the program to give a feel for where these races are and what the issues are. Mike is well known to people in Wisconsin, distinguished fellow in law and public policy at Marquette University Law School. He has earned many national and local awards during his long journalism career, including two Emmy Awards. Mike does Upfront with Mike Ushay on Channel 12 in Milwaukee, statewide show this is, and he does a great deal of political analysis. He'll be doing election coverage for that station, and he does it better than anybody. He served at WTMJ for a number of years as lead anchor and host of Sunday Night with Mike Ushay, and we're happy to have him in our downtown Milwaukee studios. We'll be welcoming phone calls. I would think that these campaigns are in their last day. Many of you will have thoughts about the recall elections, and we welcome your phone calls during the course of the hour. The number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Hello, Mike, once again. It's nice to see you.
It's great to be with you, Kathleen.
It is amazing to watch television these days, isn't it? That is all you see. You don't even see ads for Tums.
They've all been bumped aside.
Right.
I think some people are afraid to sit in front of their TV sets anymore because, as you said, it is incessant. It really
and
is.
The money that has been spent, there is something to be said for using that money for perhaps another purpose rather than television ads.
Well, the amount of money is astounding to anyone who's watching this, whether they're in the state of Wisconsin or outside the state of Wisconsin. The number you mentioned is accurate. Anywhere from 30, I've even seen numbers as high as $40 million before this is all said and done.
Wow.
And most of that money is from outside groups. Most of it is not being spent by the candidates themselves. They're right now probably about $6 or $7 million. But most of it is money from special interest groups who feel that the stakes are high enough that they need to invest in this election.
And do we know who those special interest groups are now, or did that Supreme Court decision change all of our
We know who some of them are. Some have had to register and have registered. We know some of the, for example, labor-backed groups who are participating in this. But we don't know who some of the groups are. We know their names. We see the ads on a frequent basis, and you see the same names repeated again and again. But because of the current laws that we have, it's more difficult to determine the identity, the individuals who might be contributing money to those special interest groups.
And what you've seen a lot of political ads in your lifetime, mm-hmm. Do you think that they're on message here, or are we looking at a lot of extraneous issues on both sides that are part of the ad?
Well, I think the truth can become a casualty in political campaigns, often does. And I think, as we've seen, for example, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's analysis of many of these ads, its PolitiFact feature. I think sometimes the truth is casually, and we've seen that again this year. And I think the ads, people feel you can take a point and keep moving it out there further and further. This happened, and because this happened, that could have influenced this, and this could have influenced that, and it becomes this extension of there's a nugget of truth in there to begin with, and by the end of it, it's not too close to the truth.
Mm-hmm. the issue for a long time, and the reason for the protests, of course, in Madison was collective bargaining.
Right.
It seems to me as though the issues have shifted somewhat since those massive demonstrations.
Couldn't agree more with you on that. And all of the politicians I've talked to, the people who are the subjects of the recalls, the challengers, the people analyzing these races say exactly the same thing. It started with the anger over the changes in collective bargaining in Wisconsin. That's what led to the recalls. But at this point in these campaigns, they look very much like standard political campaigns, where the issues are Democrats trying to be strong proponents of public education, Republicans talking about balancing the budget and talking about putting the economy on the right footing. You hear familiar themes. So these campaigns at this moment now look like pretty standard political campaigns.
Mm-hmm. And how much national attention is there on this? How many people are going to be watching this very closely tomorrow?
Well, the chattering class, as they say, will all be watching, the people, the pundits. But there is a lot going on in Wisconsin that is of interest to the rest of the country, because you're seeing certain themes that have been tried in Wisconsin, whether it's taking on public employee unions. People are paying attention to see whether or not the people of Wisconsin, how they feel about that at this moment. And I think that will affect other campaigns. It will perhaps have an influence on how national candidates move forward with certain issues that they choose to highlight. So there is this sense that we're getting really the first good snapshot of how this new style of politics, the new Republican-controlled political enterprise, how their policies are faring. And depending on what happens in Wisconsin, you may see some adjustments made by both Democrats and Republicans.
Not a slam dunk, but probably tight races.
Most people that I've talked with feel that there will be a number of tight elections. Democrats are hoping to obviously swing at least three seats when it's all said and done. They need that to regain control of the state Senate. Most observers that I've talked with think that's a possibility. It's tough, though. There are probably a couple of seats that are more likely than others, and then there are a couple that I think are typically Republican turf. But where Democrats are waging very, very strong campaigns. So we'll see when it's all said and done. But again, three is the magic number for Democrats. And this may not be decided after tomorrow night. You still have two more recall elections. You have recall elections for the Democrats who left the state during the collective bargaining debate. And the importance of those may grow depending on what happens tomorrow night.
It is amazing when you just said that. I'm remembering what happened here not that long ago. It is remarkable what's going on in Wisconsin.
It is. And I was listening to your show back a couple of weeks ago, and you had a professor on from Boise State University, and you were talking about how often we see something like this.
Right.
And I can, when I tell people this, they find it hard to believe. But I think the number he used and the number that I've seen is, I think since about 1907 in this country, there have been 20 recall elections for state officials. 20. And I think 14 of them were successful. Now think about that. Wisconsin has 9 of them happening in the span of a couple of months, and the potential for great changes in this state. I mean, it is truly mind-boggling, and it is absolutely historic.
Yes, it is. Were all the candidates accessible to you?
We've had good luck with the candidates, we featured the first joint appearance between Sandy Pasch and Alberta Darling on our program. We had Randy Hopper and Jessica King in their race on our program. They were separate. They did not appear together. This past Sunday, we had Luther Olson and Fred Clark, who were battling it out in central Wisconsin. They were on the program together. And then next week we'll have Bob Wirch, the Kenosha Democrat, with Jonathan Stites, a political newcomer. And they will appear head-to-head, too. So the candidates I have found have generally been pretty willing to do this sort of thing.
We live in the Milwaukee area, so I want to spend some time on the Pasch-Darling race. Those of you who are in other parts of the state, and Mike will fill us in on those, too, but you're seeing firsthand in other parts of the state what the ads are like, what the tenor of the campaign is. I cannot believe how much energy has been focused on this race on both sides for a long period of time now. These campaigns seem to be extremely well organized, maybe almost too well organized.
There are more people on the ground in these races, I think it's safe to say, than just about any election I've witnessed. And some of them are from Wisconsin, some are not, from or outside
right.
Wisconsin. But I have talked to veteran politicos, people who have been in this business a long, long time, and they have told me repeatedly they have never seen this kind of passion. They have never seen this many people who are involved in the day-to-day work of a campaign. And anybody who's been around politics knows that there are an awful lot of people who don't get a lot of credit for what they do, but they play important roles in those campaigns. And this time around, you have people lining up to fill these jobs that aren't terribly glamorous jobs, and they don't get recognized by anybody, and but they want to do it because they feel strongly about it. So it's very interesting to see. It's definitely different than a lot of campaigns I've covered in the past.
So tell me about how nervous Republicans may be, and if there's a correlation between poll numbers that we've seen that show that there is not widespread support for the governor. There are is more negative rating than positive rating for him. Does that make someone, the Republicans, nervous in any way? Does that mean that the advantage is for the Democrats here, or is that something that's just extraneous to all of the campaigns?
Both sides publicly, you know, give you the hey, we're confident we're going to do fine on Tuesday night, and I think that's true. But Republicans I've talked to privately, sure, they're concerned. You know, here's a case in point to illustrate what we're talking about here. Luther Olson was on the show yesterday. Luther Olson is a longtime senator, before that a state representative from central Wisconsin. 16 and a half years in the state Senate, he has not had a Democratic opponent. That's how Republican that district is. And now if you look at the public opinion polls, and again, you can, you know, take all of these polls with a grain of salt, but they show an extremely competitive race. And Luther Olson told me during the interview that, yeah, he's very concerned. Those were his words. He's very concerned. And he's concerned because this is just unheard of in that district. And again, you have what's happened, I think, for Republicans. Randy Hopper faces the same thing. He said, I think one out of eight voters in his district is a public employee. And those are the folks who are really unhappy, upset, and extremely motivated. So if you're a Republican, that's what you're facing. And I think their hope is that there are a lot of people out there who have not been as vocal but support the new direction of the state, and that those people will come to the polls. That's the big question mark. Who will turn out come tomorrow?
Well, how do you answer that? Who do you think will turn out?
I don't think anybody knows. We had Ken Goldstein, a longtime political observer in Wisconsin, used to work over at UW-Madison. He's now out in Washington with an organization that analyzes media buys. And he was saying there's just no way of knowing what's going to happen tomorrow. He said, it was just a great quote. He said, you know, typically running a campaign, he said, is, you know, it's not simple, but it's more like an algebra word problem. He said, you basically know it's a certain time of the year, and you certainly know who the electorate's going to be. So you know those things. He said, not this time around. How do you know what's going to happen on a Tuesday in the middle of August in an off-year election? He said, you just don't know. And he said, so this is differential calculus. This is not an algebra word problem. He said, they simply don't know. And so that, in fact, Kathleen, that results in all the money we've seen. They are throwing money in amounts that we can barely imagine because they're not sure who's going to turn out. And with that question in their minds, they'd rather be safe than sorry. Did we not spend enough? They don't want to be asking that question on the day after
the
election.
Did we not spend enough? I think you spend enough. You spend enough. What about yard signs? Maybe you can just read it by yard signs or not.
I don't know.
Yard signs, too.
I'm not a great believer in yard signs anymore.
Mike Gouchet is our guest. It's All Things Political. Big recall races in Wisconsin tomorrow, so we're devoting most of this show to that very issue. I know it's one is on your mind. Our phone number, one line is open, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our number two of our program will be analyzing the Pew study that looks at the wealth gap rising to record levels between whites, blacks, and Hispanics. The numbers are just astounding. We'll have two guests with us, the president of MICA, which is an organization here in Milwaukee that is a group of people who work with Central City parishes, and it's an interfaith organization that does work looking at poverty. Eric Vaughn will also join us. Eric and I did a documentary series on race issues some years ago. He is the host of a really good show on WMCS radio in Milwaukee in the morning hours. He's on right now, but we want you to wait till 10 o'clock to listen to him here. Eric will join us as well. So that's coming up. Our guest and Reverend Briscoe is a pastor at New Covenant Baptist Church. He joins us. Mike Uche is here now. The recall elections are tomorrow. And away we go to your phone calls, starting with Brad in Jefferson. Hi, Brad.
Morning.
Hi.
I think the deciding factor in our political process is certainly money. And that's not the way it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be the will of the people. If you look around, there's a few powerful people in countries around the world trying to exploit the rest, and that's the same right here in Wisconsin. And it's not a Democrat or Republican thing. The wealthiest have been getting tax cuts for decades. Corporate taxes in Wisconsin are like half of what they were 25 years ago. Most of the corporations pay no income tax at all. At the same time, you got workers with wages that have been stagnant since 1974, and their benefits have been disappearing very quickly. One more point. Collective bargaining is not to blame. It's the corporate money in politics. And even Reagan said that without free unions and without collective bargaining, there is no freedom. Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call. Well, we spent some time talking about money. Money is important in this country. Money speaks.
I think certainly, and money speaks loudly in political campaigns, and that's certainly a fact of life right now, and probably will be for some time to come because of court rulings on this subject. It is this issue of, is it free speech? Is it what our founding fathers intended? Who should have access to the political process? There are some very deep questions in there, but certainly in the campaigns we have seen this time around, money has played just an enormous factor. There's really no way to get your message out as effectively as doing buys on television, and that costs a lot of money.
Yeah. So we were talking about collective bargaining. He mentioned collective
right.
bargaining. Is that, even though it's not the issue in the campaign centrally anymore, do you think that is the issue that gets people to the polls tomorrow? Is that what will motivate most people on both sides, or is it lopsided?
It's hard to say because we haven't been there. I'm not sure what's going to drive people to the polls tomorrow. I do think, though, that for example, public employees who may disagree with the new policies and with the elimination of much of collective bargaining as we know it or have known it, absolutely, that's going to be a motivating factor in getting them to the polls. And again, I think that's the one thing that the Democratic candidates have working for them tomorrow is there is that passion, that feeling among some people that we need to do something. And this is our chance to do it. And now on the Republican side, I think again, the Republican candidates are trying to appeal to what they say is sort of this constituency that you don't hear much from, but is out there and feel strongly that we need to do things differently in Wisconsin, that we were dealing with deficits on
right.
a continuing basis. That wasn't working. The job climate wasn't what we would hope it would be, and we've made some tough decisions, and every one of the candidates I've had on has said that. These were tough decisions. They were painful, and certainly more so for some people than others, but it's something that we had to do. That's what they will tell you, and they're hoping that there are enough people out there who will feel strongly about this new direction and will go to the polls tomorrow.
Thanks, Brad, for your call. We go to Carl in Duluth. Hi, Carl.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I've been out of the state, out of the region on a long summer trip, and I'm just getting back. I'm just getting back into the whole political situation here. I asked your screener a question, which she answered, which was whether there were any independent candidates or third-party candidates running in these recall elections, and she told me there were not. And that's extremely disappointing to me because you know, it's when I left the state among, you know, protests of the day there was a protest of 10,000 people in Madison, you know, against the budget, the issues were very clear, and it seemed to me the purpose of a recall was to, you know, support the demands of working people for a decent livelihood and for collective bargaining rights. And there's a chant. There was one of the major chants in the streets was, "This is what democracy looks like." And that was what democracy looks like. And as your first caller stated so eloquently, these elections seem to be not at all what democracy looks like. So it's disappointing to me, in the extreme, that unions have focused on getting, you know, backing recall elections rather than keeping people in the streets, and that there are no independent or third-party candidates who aren't.
All right. Why aren't there third-party candidates in this?
Well, I think it's tough to put together a third-party candidacy. You need the infrastructure to do that effectively. I think that's why you haven't seen it. But I will say, to Carl's point, and I think it's a very good point, there are a number of people who follow politics closely and think there are potential opportunities for independents or third-party candidates in coming elections. And much of it is because of the public's great dismay with the state of political discourse in this country or in the state, the fact that some people are tired of our polarized politics. And I'll give you an example of something I never would have thought possible. We had a guy who used to run Bucyrus here in Milwaukee. It's now been bought by Caterpillar. But Tim Sullivan was the CEO of Bucyrus, and he was on our program. He's a well-known business figure. And he's dropped some hints that he may consider running for U.S. Senate. And I had him on the program, and I said, well, why would you run for the U.S. Senate? You're a business guy. You like to run things. You're not going to do that in the Senate. And he said, well, I just think, you know, I'm really troubled at the point we've reached in our politics in this country. And I said, well, who would you run? What would party would you be affiliated with? Nobody seems to know what party you belong to. He said, well, I'd have to run it as an independent, wouldn't I? And most people say, well, you can't do it. He might be able to. He has enough money. He also has good relations with his unions when he was ahead of the seat of Bucyrus. But my point is that I think there are some serious-minded people who are beginning to consider whether or not running from the parties and running as an independent might not be something worth looking at. It's still very difficult to do in this country, but you hear more and more people talking about that potential because I think of the state we're in today.
Well, a number of people identify themselves as independents.
Many
too,
people.
Voters, don't they?
And they
a
are
growing number.
And Kathleen, they're the ones who are particularly disgusted at where we are today. If I, some of the polling I saw in the last week showed independents, I think, gave Congress the worst job approval ratings of all. I think it was 11% of independents I saw in a poll last week, New York Times poll or CNN poll. And so that shows you those people are out there. They're not happy. And I think they're looking for alternatives. So I don't know what those alternatives would look like, but I think Carl does touch on something that we could see happen in the coming years.
Yeah. Thanks, Carl, for the call. Joe in Milwaukee. Hi, Joe.
Hi. You know, I want to go back to a statement that Mike made a while ago about the you need a lot of money to buy TV ads. And it made me wonder, haven't the TV numbers been in decline lately? And I also wondered, doesn't this new media, social media, offer a cheaper venue to get your word out? I mean, look, they brought down a whole government in Egypt. Why aren't we using that here?
Good questions, Joe, and I'll try and address each of them. Yes, the numbers that the television delivers compared to, say, 15 or 20 years ago are definitely smaller than they used to be. Having said that, you can reach tens of thousands of people at any one time through one 30-second TV ad. That's just the reality. That's very hard to do in retail politics. It's hard to shake that many hands, go to that many doors. Even on a Facebook site, it's still hard to reach that kind of number. So if you're looking to just reach as many people as possible at one time, you're still probably going to go to the broadcast television stations. That's just the reality of it. And I think I was trying to remember the other part of the question.
Social media.
Well, he's right. I mean, social media is playing a greater role. We see that in what we do. I had the head of the Democratic Party in Wisconsin, Mike Tate, said, you know, we don't really need your show that much anymore.
And well, thanks a lot. Yes, you do, Mike.
I was going to say, well, it's been nice knowing you. But the point is that, no, there are other ways to get your message out. And you see more and more candidates doing that. Oftentimes, they'll even announce their candidacy, you know, through their Facebook site or through their Twitter account. And the reason for that is very simple. The candidate can control the message much more effectively. And it also tends to reach the people who are the most passionate, the people who are most likely to be engaged in the political process. So it is very much a growing part of any media strategy. It's huge. It was huge in the 2008 presidential campaign, for instance. It's not going to get smaller as we move forward. But having said that, there will still be a role for the television ads that many of us, frankly, grow weary of, but you'll still see an awful lot of them in the coming elections.
Thanks, Joe, for your call. We go next to Jim in Milwaukee. Hi, Jim.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
Quick sidebar. I'd rather support the progressive in the Democratic primary. The main thing I wanted to talk about today is this is in Wisconsin. What's happening, it represents a small battle and the bigger battle of the rich against the rest of us. And I encourage people to read Naomi Klein's book, The Shock Doctrine, and also John Perkins' Confessions of an Economic Hitman. Because all over the world, what they're doing is the rich are taking a debt which they created for their enrichment and creating a crisis which they created for their enrichment, and then what they intend to do as a final step to it is to do what they've always wanted to do, which is to beat down the, quotes, undeserving middle class and poor and beat us out of the entitlements and the gains that we've registered over the years through collective bargaining. And so it's basically an economic gang rape by the rich against the rest of us.
Mike?
I don't, you know, Jim has his opinion, and I'm just going to let his opinion stand. I don't know that there's a lot that I can add to that.
There is, though. We were talking a little bit earlier about what's happened with bailing out of Wall Street companies, et cetera. There is not much of an outrage about some of the policies that have happened. The gap between the rich and the poor is at an all-time high. The fact that the whole tax policy, we're not going to tax wealthy people in this country at a greater level, and went through this whole debt crisis and didn't even look at an increase in taxes among the rich, which doesn't seem to bother a lot of people.
I think it's one of those issues that will emerge in a much larger way in, for example, the next presidential campaign.
You?
I do. I do believe that, because I think there is I think what you're seeing, and it's reflected in some of the poll numbers, is sort of there's a disconnect in this country. There are a number of people out there who are, you know, struggling right now and having a hard time making ends meet and a hard time seeing how the future ends up being what they might have hoped it would be. And I think the Democratic Party, my sense of it is, and if you look at some of what's being done in these recall campaigns, there's a greater emphasis on that.
Mm.
And so, you know, I think there will be a more discussion about the disparity in wealth in this country coming up. But, you know, it's one of those things that people right now, there's not a lot of middle ground on that subject. I mean, people feel that, you know, we need to be talking about it a lot more, some people. And then there are other people who feel that, you know, we end up having a discussion about class warfare, that if you're successful, you're a bad person
mm-hmm.
somehow.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tough thing for this country right now. But I think it will become a greater and greater part of the Democratic Party messaging as we move forward. I think you've already seen that in these mm-hmm. recall elections. Mm-hmm. I do believe that.
Thanks, Jim, for your call. Ken in Delta. Where is that, Ken?
Ken, we're up in northern Wisconsin, Bayfield County.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Yeah, my question is, you know, the Supreme Court has said that money is speech, so you cannot restrict money in politics because it's free speech. So, but the conservatives on the right are saying the cure-all for our business problems is tort reform. Isn't a judge and jury awarding a monetary damage in a lawsuit speech?
That's a heavy question. I don't know if I'm the best person to...
Dreaming about we have to have unlimited amounts of money because it's free speech, but yet they want tort reform. Isn't a judge and a jury speech?
Have you heard anybody talk about this in any of the campaigns? Is that an issue?
No, I'm bringing it up myself because, you know, I keep hearing it over and over. Oh, we need tort reform. That's their mantra, tort reform. That's a cure-all to our business problems. We have to have tort reform.
Right.
But isn't a judge and a jury awarding a monetary damage speech?
Yeah. I haven't heard tort reform. You hear it every now and then, but I haven't heard it much.
You heard a lot of it right when the new administration took office.
Right.
There was when they tried to pass when they did pass the economic jobs package right off the bat. There was talk about tort reform and something. And still, it's a very much a tenet of the Republican Party. They believe that it was necessary to change the perception in this state of what Wisconsin was, and or they would say to change the reality. They thought the state was too conducive to lawsuits by the part of attorneys.
Thanks for the call. Let's look at how messages may change or strategies may change on the part of Republicans and Democrats depending on what happens tomorrow. If Democrats are successful, do the Democrats come out with a stronger message? They have been accused of being somewhat wishy-washy on a lot of issues. Do they change their message and become more in line with what some Democrats here are saying in terms of collective bargaining issues and money for education and all of that? On the other hand, do the Republicans look at what happens here and say, maybe we better back away in other states from collective bargaining issues, that maybe we're too strong? What happens?
Well, I think there'll be lessons learned from what happens in Wisconsin. Democrats, if they're successful and if they win back control of the Senate over the next couple of weeks, I think you will see a continuation of the messaging that we've seen in these recalls. In other words, we're the defenders and protectors of public education. We're the defenders and protectors of medical care for the poor and the less fortunate. And we're protecting your Medicare for senior citizens and senior care. And I think you'll see them continue to hammer away at those messages. And this and a theme that I've heard a lot of in the last few weeks is about the shared sacrifice theme that they do not feel that, as they say, the rich and the corporate powers are paying their fair share. I think you'll hear a lot more about that. And I think it will be a message that perhaps would be described as one that's sort of progressive in its roots. You'll see that. I think if Republicans were to lose here, there'll be some soul searching within the party and within the national party. And I think if there are lessons to be learned from that, it might be not so much that you won't see some of the same policy ideas. I think you just might see them presented a little differently. There are two governors out west, Republican governors, new governors, Sandoval, I think, in Nevada, and I think it's Martinez in Mexico, New Mexico. And they've had a great deal of success out there, and they've advanced their agenda, a conservative agenda, but with some cooperation from Democrats.
Hmm.
And they've done some of the same things that have happened in Wisconsin, and yet they're public approval ratings are much better.
That's interesting. Yeah.
But the difference out there, I think the feeling is that they've done it in a more collaborative way than what happened here in Wisconsin, where many people were surprised when the collective bargaining changes and proposals were announced. And so I think if there's a lesson to be learned from Republicans, if indeed Democrats gain control, I think it would be that you have to be able to demonstrate to people that you can get things done without all the drama. A guy who knows a lot more about politics than I said most people don't want drama from their top elected officials. They want to get things done.
Mm-hmm.
And so it may be as much a matter of how do we, put forth some of these changes, but how do we do it in a way that we can get buy-in, not from everyone, but from at least a majority of people. And so I think it may be a difference in messaging, a difference in strategy that you would see emerge in the Republican side should this not go their way.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Carol in Lake Geneva. Hi, Carol.
Hi, Mike. I'm such a longtime fan, and I have so much respect for your work, but I've gotten so cynical since January on local media reporting. And my question is, have you sensed any pressure on what you report? And if so, what form does that pressure take?
Well, first of all, thanks for the kind words. I appreciate that. I can tell you I've had no pressure whatsoever in any of what I've done on our statewide TV show. We have the final say on content. Nobody tells us what the content should be. It's a remarkable experience, frankly, as someone who's worked in the media a long time. But we're essentially left alone to do what we want to do.
And, thank goodness.
Yeah. Well, that's a tribute to my employers and
to you,
to the Hearst Corporation, to the folks at 12, and they just kind of let us do what we think we should be doing because of what's happening in the news. And so I can honestly say to you, no, there's been no interference. There's been nobody telling me what I should or shouldn't do. And my email would reflect that because it depending on the week, if we have Republicans, more conservative on, I hear from people who think we have too many Republicans and conservatives on. If we have Democrats on, some people are not happy and, you know, think I'm, you know, a knee-jerk liberal. So I see that reflected, the diversity of opinion we're presenting is reflected in our email response. And the diversity of opinion we're presenting is something we do without any interference from our bosses.
Thanks, Carol, for the call. Michael is next from Milwaukee. Hi, Michael.
Good morning. First of all, I would like to thank Mike Goucher for the service that he is providing for local news and, I think, to get out honest news. And he brings integrity to the system.
Thanks, Michael. I appreciate that.
But anyways, the legislature recently passed the voter ID bill, which is going to cost the state a lot of money. A lot of people disputed the fact that it was needed. And the reason given is that we needed this to bring honesty and integrity to the voting process in the state. And the way, in my mind, a major problem, if there's a problem with integrity and honesty in the voting system that we have, it's as we see in this latest election, all this money, especially third-party money that's being spent, to sway the voter by the vote by using downright lying, cheating, stealing, misleading advertising. I mean, they can just say anything, and if you know anything about what's going on, you know these ads are very misleading. And I think if anything destroys the integrity of the system, it's that.
Well, there are a couple of points there, and thanks for the call. The voter ID point, I think that's going to be an interesting issue to watch. You know, right now, you don't have to show voter ID to vote in these recall elections, but pretty soon you will have to produce it. And it'll be very interesting to see how that works in the state of Wisconsin. There have been some people who say that when they've tried to go buy or go get one of the new IDs, that it's not a simple process, that it takes time. And so I think there are going to be some questions raised about how effective that is. And you know, we'll see how it works out over time, I guess. As for the ads themselves, and we go back to this, and I made the comment earlier that, you know, truth sometimes is a casualty. I think what happens with these ads, again, is that they begin with a nugget of truth. But so much of what politics is context and nuance and how was something presented at a certain moment in the legislative debate. And unfortunately, these ads don't reflect much of that. They take a vote from a particular moment and hang you with
right,
it.
Right.
And this happens, and I will say this, it happens both Democrats and Republicans. They're both guilty of playing the same game. And you can make the argument, well, it's true, but is it really true? I mean, there's a difference. And I think for most people who watch these things or who follow politics, it may be the most disappointing part of the campaigns themselves is that they just feel like the ads are not necessarily about honesty and integrity. They're about, you know, just trying to move somebody to get them to vote for even a reason that may not necessarily be factual.
Mike Goucher is our guest. We're talking mostly about the recall elections because they are tomorrow. Six of them are tomorrow. And important ones they are for the direction of Wisconsin. And we're just talking about who's running and what the issues really are and what the voter turnout may be like and the national attention on this, and we're the center of the country tomorrow. Our number is 800. Michael, thanks for your call. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. And we'll be taking more phone calls in a moment on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our number two of our program, the Pew Research Study done very recently that looks at income disparity among blacks, Hispanics, and whites, which is at the largest that it has been since the government started keeping track of these numbers 25 years ago. We'll have two guests with us, Reverend Willie Briscoe, president of the Milwaukee Inner City Congregations Allied for Hope, assistant pastor of New Covenant Baptist Church, and Eric Vaughn will join us, host of the Morning Magazine, which is a really good show, based here in Milwaukee at 1290 AM WMCS. Back to phone calls from Mike Goucher. Peg in Antigo is next. Hi, Peg.
Hello. Recently, I've been reading about ALEC, American Legislative Exchange Council, and that was founded in 1973 by Paul Weyrich. And it's a right-wing network, and everybody, even Tommy Thompson, was a member and used their much of their legislative suggestions. And today we have Newt Gingrich and Eric Cantor and anybody who is anybody in the Republican Party, even in the states. And what is happening in Wisconsin is a concerted effort to dismantle unions, to privatize schools, to have voter IDs, to control everything. And I find that extremely frightening, and also frightening that not many people know about it. And I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but this definitely you can see as the Koch brothers and their pseudo grassroots organizations get going and have caused so much disruption. I find it's a frightening thing that, once again, money is controlling the whole thing.
Your guess is as good as anybody's. What do you think is going to happen tomorrow, Peg?
I have no idea. I'm rooting for the Democrats is all I can say, but I'm working hard here for them, but for our recall people. But I think people should know more about this organization.
All right, Peg, thanks for the call. Are there organized national groups that are setting political agendas on the Republican side and on the Democratic side or not?
There's definitely a national flavor to these recall races, and certainly I think you can say without any doubt that there are groups that have a particular philosophy they would like to see expressed in certain legislation. And so this is an example, I think. This is a test case for some of those competing philosophies. And that's what's happening in Wisconsin. But, you know, that's the subject of ALEC, the group that Peg mentioned. You know, there's been some interesting reporting. It's becoming more and more of a subject for discussion. I know John Nichols over at the Capital Times and for The Nation has written about that and has his own point of view on it. And So I think that's something that is becoming more and more discussed in politics. But again, I should say that it really comes down to philosophy and how do you want that philosophy expressed? And there is a conservative philosophy that says there are certain things we'd like to see happen that we think will make the country a better place. And so they push for those things. And the difference right now is that you have a Republican-controlled legislature in Wisconsin and a Republican governor. And so as long as the numbers remain in their favor, they're going to push forward with their agenda.
And is the difference partially because you have a greater difference in philosophy now than you used to have, or not?
I think that's a good point. In fact, I think some political observers would argue that the parties themselves are being more controlled by the people, for example, on the Democratic side, the people who are more to the left, people in the Republican Party more to the right. It's the edges of these parties that are controlling the debate in many respects. And so they both have strong opinions. And I think there's a feeling right now in politics as it's practiced today that to compromise, to move to the middle on this is a sign of weakness. This is a life and death battle over what our country is going to be, and we're not going to give an inch on that.
Right.
And I think that's the reason why we have some of the current situations, whether it's Congress and the debt ceiling debate in Washington or whether it's been some things we've seen in the state of Wisconsin. There's not a lot of middle ground that's driving the debate. It's mostly out there on the edges.
Yeah, and I think that's making people very upset, Mike. I really do. You hear people don't want government to function that way. I don't think. They want people to get along with each other and compromise on issues.
Well, as I said, I think, and this is a guy I have a lot of respect for. I mean, he said, really, people do not want drama in their politics. You know, let's have government help deal with the problems that face us. That's what they want. But right now, I think it's more a debate that's driven by both sides far out on the edges rather than in the middle.
Thanks, Peg, very much for the call. Jerry in Glendale. Hi, Jerry.
Well, for 30 years, we've watched Mike Boucher in this market just ignore the absolute destruction of organized labor. Very few guests on his Sunday night program on Channel 4. One time he had Michael Moore on. Never any labor leaders. Bruce Colburn appeared one time. The corporate leaders always had great access. They still have access at 12 now. Hasn't interviewed the secretary treasurer of the state AFL-CIO, nor the president, Phil Neuenfeld.
All right, Jerry, can you talk a little about the recall? We kind of want to concentrate on that because...
The recall, and from an organized labor point of view, the recall, our focus should have been totally on Walker. These races are ultimately going to have absolutely no bearing because next year, given the districting that the Republicans accomplished 3 weeks ago up in the legislature, the Republicans are going to win these seats in 2012.
All right. Mike, will they?
Well, the redistricting that Jerry speaks of definitely does make these elections sort of a tough situation for Democrats. I was talking to Fred Clark yesterday. Fred Clark is from Baraboo. He's running for this seat in central Wisconsin. Under the redistricting plan, he would no longer live in his Senate seat, even if he were to win.
Oh my.
So then he'd have to decide, does he move? That happens. Sandy Pasch, for instance, if she were to win in that district, that district will change. It will become more Republican next time around, and it would be probably very difficult for her to retain that seat. So that has happened. The redistricting, which Republicans legally had the right to do, they have to meet certain legal standards, and it is the subject of a legal challenge right now. They have to meet certain legal standards, but it does make for more safe Republican seats or stronger Republican seats. And of course, Republicans argue that if Democrats had had the power, and they would have done exactly the same thing. But it does make for an interesting situation for some of these Democratic candidates who might find themselves either having to move or in a very difficult reelection campaign just because of the changing boundaries.
Thanks for the call, Jerry. Let's go to Edward in Madison. Hi, Edward.
Good morning. I'm interested in what... Governor Walker's 65-point agenda has on these local elections, and how it, from my point of view, I live in San Francisco now, and we went through a recall election with Governor Schwarzenegger taking over from Gray Davis, and we've gone through... these power grabs, these political power grabs. We've had the savings and loan scandal during my lifetime and the Enron power scandal, and I understand that the Koch brothers own Minneapolis Power and Electric, and
Edward,
there was some indication that the current governor, Walker, would sell Wisconsin Power and Electric, and that they might be the potential buyers. So I'm interested that in this era where we're celebrating the Civil War centennial, if it's like political warfare that's going on here in Wisconsin, that the...
All right. We got political warfare here, Mike?
Well, we have political warfare in Wisconsin. I mean, it's a battleground. And, you know, what's interesting is that in these elections, you have not seen some of the more high-profile Republican figures in the state doing a lot of campaigning. The governor has kept a fairly low profile. And I think has found himself sort of in this position that Jim Doyle often found himself in, where candidates were associated with Jim Doyle. And now you're seeing a lot of advertising
where
you know, essentially it's, well, they backed Scott Walker. And so the governor, I think, has kept a fairly low profile, intentionally so. And even Congressman Ryan to some degree, because of the Medicare issue, which has been used in this race, even though you could certainly argue that's not really a statewide issue.
John is calling us from Vermont. Hi, John. Whoa, there we go.
I got
Hi, John.
Hello.
Hi,
Kathleen.
Hi, John.
Thanks for another great show.
Thanks, John.
I'm just calling because I wanted to address this, what the guest brought up about how both sides are unwilling to compromise and stuff. And I just, I've been following, obviously, all the political goings on in Wisconsin when I was living there and now here in Vermont. And I just don't quite see that happening. I mean, even if you look back at, you know, when Governor Walker first proposed stripping collective bargaining, the union said, we will give you all the concessions we want, just don't take away our rights. And that wasn't enough. And I've seen this over and over again on the state level and on the national level, that it's really not a both sides are unwilling thing as much as it is extremism on the right. Paul Krugman had a great piece in the New York Times about this, you know, not too long ago, that really the extremism is lying on the right wing right now. And I'd like to kind of address that false equivalence dichotomy.
Thanks, John. We have about 15 seconds to take that on, Mike.
I hear that argument quite often, and it probably, on some issues, it's probably correct that it appears that one side does not appear to be compromised. And I'm sure Republicans would say on the issue, for example, of Medicare, Democrats don't want to compromise. What is your plan? How would you deal with the looming crisis in Medicare? And so both sides make that argument that the other is not willing to do the serious things that need to be done. But I have heard that argument frequently.
Thank you, John. Thanks for listening in Vermont. What time do you start coverage tomorrow night?
We'll start with the early evening newscast, so 5 and 6 o'clock, and then I think we'll be doing the hour-long newscast at 10 o'clock, but we'll have results before that at the bottom of the screen.
And you think it's going to be a long night? You don't know.
I have no
idea. You don't know what's going to
I'm like everybody
happen.
Else. Kathleen, I have no idea.
Thank you, Mike. Thanks so much. Always a great pleasure
Good
to have
see you
on. Thanks. Mike Goucher, his election coverage will be on, as you heard him say, tomorrow night, and he does fabulous analysis. Well, thank you to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour. Chrissy Pease for on-air production here in downtown Milwaukee will return following the news.